I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Okay, so we're back again talking about dogs. Just dogs in general. Good and bad, good and bad. So we just had your number three.
Yep, we did.
So this is going to be my number three. Yes, so this is probably the most evil dog on the list because it's a very real evil. This kind of evil. So this is a film called White Dog, that was also out in 1982. And the film is basically a young actress runs over a dog. It's a white German Shepherd, and it's absolutely just white as you can get.
Yeah.
Now she takes the dog in. She decides to look after it, and she has a home invasion.
Okay.
And somebody tries to get her, and the dog protects her. They manage to call the police, and she's saved. And eventually she's been putting out all these kind of adverts saying, whose dog is it? And then she kind of decides to keep the dog.
Okay.
Unbeknownst to her, the dog is what they call a white dog. It has been trained and conditioned and programmed to purely attack black people. So it's a racist dog, basically.
Okay.
Effectively, it's a racist dog.
All right.
But basically, he has an owner who's maybe hired some homeless people, black people, or drug addicts,
yeah.
And has asked them to beat this dog as a young dog. So it's train them and condition them to hate black people.
Again, bad owner.
Yeah. Again, bad owner. Very bad owner.
Yeah.
So what happens is she realizes this and it attacks a few people, kills two or three people in this film, black people in this film, or at least injures them. And she decides that she needs to have this. She loves the dog. Like, the film does a really good job of positing racism as a condition, a type of thinking that is a learnt behavior.
Right.
It's not something that's instilled at birth. You don't, wake up and go, I'm a racist.
Yeah.
Babies don't have that problem.
No.
Children don't have that problem.
Kind of looking at like the Bobo clone effect thing here.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. And I think that's the most interesting part of the film.
Yeah.
This film, unfortunately, because of the subject matter, it was actually like, it had a very limited release. And it was shelved for about 25 years because the NAACP, obviously, they got wind of what the film was about. And the original book, so I'll go back to the plot and I'll come back to this. So what she does, the actress, she says, I need to retrain this dog. And one of the trainers at this place, it's kind of like a zoo for stage animals and Hollywood animals.
Yeah.
So they train them to do what they need to do for the film. And basically, one of the owners says, I absolutely will not do this because a friend of mine got killed by a German Shepherd, basically. Mm-hmm. Those kind of dogs, you can't retrain. And then this the other owner, who's a black man, I think Paul Winslow, he plays the character. He's one of the police detectives in the original Terminator film,
right.
And has played several other roles, famous roles as well. He's fantastic in this film. So he says, because it's a white dog and because it's been trained to attack black people, I want to be able to retrain this dog. I want to come up with a system that will allow me to retrain this dog, and then we can send this all over the world, and we will no longer have this racist weapon against black people. And he's really compelling, and some of the dialogue is a bit on the nose,
yeah.
And a bit very sometimes it's a bit ham-fisted and stuff. It's not as subtle as it could be, but he really, like, he sells the whole movie.
Yeah.
He finds the dog escapes at one point. He has this kind of quite daring escape, and it attacks a black man and kills him in a church, and that really affects him. And at that point, the actress says, "Kill the dog. It's killed a person. Kill it."
Yeah,
we can't retrain it. And he goes, that's just bigoted mind. That's your bigoted mindset, is that we can't, if that's the way it thinks, that's it.
Yeah.
Kill it. Done. And like, that's kind of, you hate racism, but you will do nothing to stop the onslaught of racism, this continued mental state of hatred, this continued hatred of people. And he's like, you're small minded. If we can come up with a way to fix this problem. We can fix all dogs. So yeah. This never happens ever again. And no one is ever hounded by these attack animals ever again. And it is a really powerful film. Now, what I was saying about the NAACP, they got wind of it. The original book, the ending is basically the black trainer undoes the conditioning of the animal, but then retrains it to attack white people.
Okay.
So that for me is potentially offensive.
Yeah.
That's a potentially offensive statement. But in this film, that's not the case. They've completely, the director was obviously, he's made several films about the subject of racism.
Yeah.
He's clearly not, you know, anywhere near a racist. But I think it was, they were worried that the original book would have the same ending as the movie, or the movie would have the same ending as book, and that it would be potentially offensive.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. It's all about the training. And it comes to there's a bit of a climax where, there is a climax where they think they've done it. They even don't tell the police that man was killed by that dog in order to get this done. And the trainer's like, you know, if this doesn't work, I'll kill the dog.
Right, okay.
Absolutely. If it comes down to it, I will kill this dog. And he says, and if it doesn't work, I'll try with another dog. I'll find another dog until I find a way to do this in a way that is safe and that we can, you know, undo this conditioning. There's a really nice moment as well where the person who owns the dog comes with the flyer, but to the actress's house. And he appears to be a very sweet, gentle grandfather.
Right.
And he has two little daughters, like, you've got our dog, can we have it back, please? And obviously that's
not the case.
That's not real.
Yeah.
You know, that's him.
Kind of a front.
That's his front, but deep down, he's a horrific racist. And he even says, like, you've trained this dog to be a white dog. You've trained this dog to be an attack dog. And he was like, yeah, one of the best. And it's like, and she's screaming at the kids saying, don't trust your grandfather. He's an awful human being.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll get my dog back. And the finale of the film, don't want to spoil it. I won't spoil the ending, but the finale of the film is basically the trainer has no protection, no armor or anything.
Yeah.
Has a gun and lets the dog out.
Wow.
And that's the finale. I won't tell you how it goes or what happens, but it's really gripping.
Yeah.
And the whole film's done very well. And it's a real shame that it got shelved for so long.
Yeah.
Because it really isn't anything that the NAACP were worried about.
Yeah, it's true.
And a lot of people really, really like this film. It's got kind of a cult following now. I think Criterion have released it on DVD, Blu-ray, over here, so you can get it. It is available. And I highly recommend it. It's a really, really good film. I think it's a real nice kind of... It's a bit of a genre film. It feels like a bit of a genre film. And a little bit art housey, but it does have that kind of entertainment value and a very clear, very, very clear message that racism is bad.
Yeah.
So don't worry about that. But if it makes you uncomfortable and if it's not an uncomfortable subject matter, probably avoid it again, like Baxter. It is what it is. I think it was a very well-made film. So highly recommend seeking it out.
It's good. I mean, like you were saying about the... woman's obviously saying, like, put the dog down. And for a lot of, well, pretty much every case, that is what happens essentially.
So. Yeah. If there's any kind of attacks and
I
stuff.
I think, like, it just goes to show, though, like, if you could prove that you could change the dog, then anything maybe. Something like that could happen.
Yeah, maybe if it wasn't just like a racist attack dog, if it's just a dog that had a specific mental condition or,
like,
you know,
didn't
like women in hats, for example, or something like that. Yeah.
Well, they say that, like, dogs have different things. Like, there's literally dogs that have some kind of mental disorder and they just, like, switch.
That's it.
And it's so obviously them that. The ones that get put down quite a lot.
Yeah, and that's a real shame, you know. You know, in some countries, humans get the same treatment, that's the way
it is.
It's
really interesting.
Dog politics.
Because you don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah, exactly. We have to work it out ourselves. but no, I think on the list, I think White Dog is the best movie.
Yeah.
Like, out and out, the strongest movie that I've got on my list. But they're all good movies. I've all really enjoyed these movies, and that's why they're on the list. But I think White Dog is the strongest, like, beat for beat, a very strong movie. You know, you can watch this, you know, anybody can watch this, you know, obviously. One of the more disturbing aspects is when the dog's covered in, like, he has this, obviously, this lovely white coat.
Yeah.
But obviously it's covered in blood,
constantly
covered in blood during all these attacks. And that's the most disturbing part of the imagery, I think, as well. It's really fascinating film.
Yeah,
I would definitely dig it out or get it on DVD or Blu-ray if you can, because it's so, so good. So, yeah. White Dog, 1982's White Dog.
Another one on the list of things to watch.
Again.
I'm still not going to
watch. And again, I don't think they gave the dog a name because I don't think they wanted to personalize it too much.
Yeah.
Like, and make it feel, have like a personality. Like, you know, if you attribute a name to a racist dog, you probably wouldn't want to name a child or a dog.
Yeah, so you can't really
after
call
that.
It,
yeah.
You can't really call it anything.
Yeah. So I think that's, and it kind of makes it, like, obviously they do a good job of, like, you know, because it basically, the dog saves the actress from a rape.
Yeah.
So obviously you're with the dog in that moment. Yeah. You're like, you know, this is a good dog. This is a really good, yeah, you know, dog. But then obviously you find out later on that
it's a bad dog.
Yeah. One of the attacks is on a fellow actress while they're doing an advert, and she goes into the hospital to visit her, and she's like, I don't know what set him off. The white actress who owns the dog, she can barely look at her, barely face her, because she's like so ashamed that she had no idea that this dog she loves has such violent behavior towards a certain type of people. And again, all down to the owner. So there you go. Powerful stuff.
I know.
Powerful stuff. So,
like,
yeah.
My list of things to watch dog-wise.
Yeah. It's getting longer. So you see? So they're not so bad, these dogs. No, they are. They're very, very bad. But
in an interesting
way. Yeah, in an interesting way. So that's why I've picked that one. So we're on to your number two.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this one's a good dog.
Okay, very good. The well, we need a palette change. to mix it up a bit now.
So my number two is Doug. Because everybody loves Doug. You're looking at me really weird, but it's actually Doug from Up.
Oh, yes, yes.
So
I was thinking like Porkchop from Doug the cartoon, because there was Doug the movie, so yeah. That could technically count.
Porkchop, yeah. But Doug,
he's a good dog.
He is the best dog.
He's my favorite dog.
And like, you're talking about characterization, and you get to know what they're thinking because he's got a collar on.
Yeah. So the collar speaks for him.
Yeah.
You know,
genuinely. And like, we were talking about theory. So there was the whole Frank and Weiner theory.
Before. Yeah.
Now I have my own theory with Doug.
Okay.
So he's literally been an outcast for his entire life.
Aww.
I know. And he's like, obviously, the beta of the pack. And he's always in the code of shame.
Yeah.
Which is a bog standard thing in our house that we shout at Odin. Like, don't let us bring out the cone of shame.
Cone of silence, cone of shame.
So he's this kind of always looking to be kind of loved kind of character, and he's never really had that. He's in this pack and they all hate him, and his owners doesn't really pay much attention to the dogs. Yeah. And then literally this kid and this old guy come along.
Yeah.
And he decides, you're the ones and I'm having you. And it literally takes like the whole film for him to go, because he gets called a good boy at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Like when he says, I was hiding under your porch because I love you. Like, the best thing about that movie. But yeah, and then he goes, you're a good boy, and it completely changes. And it's really nice to see, and it's nice to kind of like that he's gone from like having really like a rubbish life to having like
I love his kind of like the dialogue they write for him.
Yeah.
Is kind of it's very like obvious how he feels and thinks and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But that is how a dog would think. Yeah. Like, it's very much like, I love you. You're here and I love you.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite like, it's ingenious.
Yeah.
In a way, like he's like Up for me is a fantastic movie. Anyway, I went to see it and almost cried in the first
almost
like I was on the verge, but then. And I was like, no, it's over now. I can control myself. I went to see it with an ex-girlfriend. And then at the end, there's the bit where he turns over the page and it says, go have your own adventure.
Yeah, did that get you?
And I hadn't cried for about 8-9 years, something like that, like a really long time. Like, you know, I'm not dead inside, but I just haven't, you know, it was like Chandler from Friends, the floodgates
open.
And I was, we went down the illuminations afterwards, and even my girlfriend was like, get a fucking grip, man. You know, I was like, she was quite cold, I'll be honest. But you know, and I was just like, I was just in bits. I was just honestly in bits.
Yeah.
And Doug's a big part of that as well.
Doug's a
like,
huge part of that. Like,
and even the little boy in it as well. What's his name? Russell. Like, again, like the kind of the father son issues in that. And I'm like, oh my God. And then, but Doug was a big part of that because he's, you know, he was another kind of lovely touchstone in the film for that made me think about like my childhood, my life in general. I think it was like so much stuff going on, but Doug, like I can hear that in a dog. Like,
even if
I can't, you know, hear it literally, I can hear it.
Anyone who owns a dog, if you have not sat and talked for your dog,
yeah,
are you a real dog owner?
Exactly. Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy?
We literally sit with Odin on a regular.
Oh, there we go. There's Doug. We said his name.
Yeah. We sit with him.
There's Andy.
In.
There's Andy. There's the disciplined, strong owner he needs.
We sit.
Andrew's not a Nazi, and he's not interested in Nazism at all. Just to make people
just
aware,
put that in.
And he's not a serial killer either,
no, he's not.
As far as I'm aware.
Yeah, we sit with Odin, and on a regular basis, we do Odin's voice.
Yeah.
So Odin's kind of like a proper Wiganer.
Oh yeah.
So like we have pies.
Proper Wiganer.
He is a proper Wiganer. So when we have like pies or anything like that, he's like, ooh, pie.
Yeah.
He's like, ooh, what's that?
Ooh, what's that?
Ooh.
What's going on?
Like, what?
What'd you say? What'd you say?
And that's kind of Odin's voice. Mm. So when you kind of see Doug, you know, and he's going like, hi there.
Mm.
Like, it's a proper connection because as a dog owner, we're like, oh my God, that's what we do. And like the minute you, like when they start shouting squirrel,
yeah,
and they all look, that's pretty much what he does.
Yeah.
Anytime we're out, he's like, what's that? And he's like,
I love, I don't know if it's the writing. I think it's the writing, the performance that kind of do. I don't know if I've ever seen the voice actor for Doug. I probably have seen him somewhere. He's probably been on some. Yeah, I might have to look it up and kind of see who it is. But he's just, it's incredible. Like he just gets that mentality across. It's not like, again, it's not like he's stupid. It's just the way a dog thinks.
Yeah.
It's just the way the dog brain is designed to think.
Yeah.
That is
like,
it.
Like sniff this, look at that. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. It's really kind of like,
and it's like
short attention span.
Yeah,
like that's what, and it's just brilliant.
So there's no like subtext. It's all like text. It's all like
that's it.
Like you know, laying the heart on the line, like heart on the sleeve, sort of the way the dog feels,
and that's essentially what dogs are like.
Yeah,
it's like you can walk down the street, and when they start jumping up at you,
they're just like, you're a person.
Yeah,
hello.
Oh, God.
Oh, new person, new smells, new experiences. Yeah. Oh, great.
And it's
someone else, just strike me. You know, that's
also have you seen the short?
With Doug?
Yeah.
No, I've not seen that.
If you've not, you need to go and watch it. I'm not going to say anything else about it, but it kind of gives you more of an insight into
his, you know,
into his life.
He's not sociopathic as well,
no,
is he?
He's not sociopathic.
Or a racist.
No, he's not. But yeah, it's something, if you've not seen it before, go and watch it.
I would like to see that. Yeah. Was that attached to any of the films?
I think it's like on maybe the old DVD.
Okay.
I'll dig it out.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I really would love to see that, because I think that's one of, like, if I was doing the good dogs, Doug would definitely be on, like, if not number one, he would definitely be on the list. He's just brilliant. And I think a lot of people, I used a picture when I was promoting this, I used a picture of Doug and Alpha as an example. Just because they're very polar opposites.
Well, if you think about it, because Alpha in there, if he didn't have like the squeaky voice, like when they change his voice and and it's like his original one, it's actually quite terrifying.
Yeah, it's like a genuine, because it's a bit squeaky. It's like, oh, I'm Alpha.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
And then it kind of changes. It's like,
I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah,
but no, I think that's again a choice I would have made. Definitely, 100% made that choice as well. So I'm glad you chose it as well, because that's something that would have come up on mine. So I got a couple more. So my number two is, this is a film adaptation of a very classic storyline.
Okay.
Classic bit of literature, English literature, and there's been over 30 interpretations of this one story.
Okay.
It is The Hound of the Baskervilles. Yeah. So it's Sherlock Holmes, a Sherlock Holmes story, who wrote him now? I can't remember who wrote him. You know, that fella, you know.
The guy who writes the story.
Fem, the guy who writes the Sherlock, everyone knows his name, but I'm drawing a blank at the moment. But, yes, his name, that one. I might edit this out. Who knows? Who knows? Anyway. Hound of the Baskervilles. So I could have picked way over 30 of, it's a classic story.
Yeah.
People love it. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, done on film several times, TV as well. You know, Benedict Cumberbatch has done a version of it as well. Really good version. Yeah, I really liked that interpretation. I'd never seen an interpretation before of the story, so that was quite a nice take on it. So I've picked the Hammer Horror version of Hound of the Baskervilles. So it stars Peter Cushing as Sherlock Holmes,
okay,
a fantastic Sherlock Holmes if you haven't seen it, and it's also got Christopher Lee as, you know, Lord Baskerville.
Hey.
I think it's Henry Baskerville, I want to say. One of the Baskervilles. You know, the Lord of the Baskervilles, you know, the High Lord of the Baskervilles, whatever. So he's, can't remember the film at all, can I? So basically, there's a curse that was put on a former Lord of the Baskervilles, Hugo, I believe, did some horrible, horrible things. He was a bit of a psychopath, did all this sort of thing, treated women poorly, killed people, threw people out the window. In the opening scene, he's throwing some guy out the window into the mall. And it's just like, ah, you're a dick. Throws him out of the window, you know, and then he goes out into the moors to kill somebody. And he chases down a woman, goes to kill her, and then he hears this howl. And then he's like, no, no, no. And you kind of get a point of view shot from the Hound of the Baskervilles. So it's basically like a cursed dog, a hell dog.
Yeah.
In the original book, what they did is they paint the dog with an luminous paint. So it looks like a ghost dog, effectively. I'm not sure if they've done that in any of the other interpretations that I've seen, but in this one, it is like in the Benedict Cumberbatch version, there is no dog.
It's
a hallucination, isn't it? Through drugs or something.
Yeah.
But in this version, it is an actual dog, which is why I chose this particular version, because it's got to be a bloody dog. Yeah. There's no dog. It's kind of pointless.
Not a drug hallucinated dog.
But and again, you don't see the dog a lot. It's very limited till like the final act.
Yeah.
But the fear and the terror and the presence of the dog is throughout.
Yeah.
Is throughout. And because Terence Fisher, I think, directs, who did a lot of the Hammer horror, Dracula, Frankenstein, all that sort of stuff, with Lee and with Cushing, they know how to do horror and they know how to feed that in and to litter those little kind of pepper it through the film. And it really does work. And the more you kind of build up this kind of the idea that it could be real, because you like the whole idea is this, everyone believes that this dog is real and not to go out on the moors, not to be, you know, find yourself alone, because this dog will have you. Yeah. If it won't eat you, it'll scare you to death.
Yeah.
And they talk about the former Lord of the Baskervilles had died, and they talk about this pained expression on his face. No footprints were found. You know, how could he have died? This whole mystery to it. And that's what makes Sherlock Holmes really good, is the kind of the mystery and the finding out.
Yeah.
But even in the Benedict Cumberbatch version, and even in this version, he kind of doubts himself. He goes, could it be real?
Yeah.
Could this be a ghost? Could this be a hellhound? What could this be? And it's really good. And Peter Cushing's amazing. All the actors in it are really, really good. Really fascinating and great to watch. It's not very long. I think it's like an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I watch it on YouTube. It is available on YouTube if you want to find it there. But you can buy it on DVD as well. That's available also. But it's a really fun kind of take on it. And the performances are great. I would pay a lot of attention to it because a lot of it's like very fast dialogue. Because I think I had to rewind the first 10 minutes because I was doing something else. So it was all like, yes, of course. And elementary, my old dear Watson. You know, all this sort of, yeah, it's all very like, no, I'm more intelligent than you when I figure this out. And like, oh my God, Holmes, incredible. You know, it's a lot of that. But if you're into that and you like that and you like Hammer horror,
yeah,
this is the film for you. When you do get to a finale, it's a Great Dane.
Oh,
so the dog is like this huge Great Dane, like bit almost as tall as Christopher Lee, and he's, you know, he's no slouch. He's must be like six something, and it jumps like his whole height jumps on top of Christopher Lee, tries to eat him. They don't do the luminous paint thing in this version. They put a horrific mask on it.
Oh.
This like kind of like demonic kind of mask. It kind of has this huge kind of bulbous head. And it's, to be honest, a Great Dane is terrifying enough.
Yeah.
If it comes for you.
They're huge.
And to put a scary mask on it, fair enough. I would shit myself. And I don't want to mess with that dog.
No.
And yeah, so I won't spoil it too much, but that's the version I chose.
That it's one of those films, like, you know, when you watch a film and then you go out walking on your own and you think about that film afterwards. Like if you were on a moors and you were thinking,
I walked to work the other day and the fog was really thick.
Oh, really?
And it did make me think a little bit like there could be a hellhound just waiting on this other side of this corner or something. And I was like, it was like early in the morning, frost, you know. And I luckily had my headphones in, but I heard like a dog noise or a howl or something.
I genuinely hear it when you do stuff. Like we were walking, I think me and my friend were walking through Bury Market at one point, or Berry Market, if you're from Berry.
However, if you want to pronounce it, it's fine.
If you're a Wiganer, it's Bury. Mm. But yeah, and she was like, oh.
And Bolton.
Bolton.
Bolton, not Bolton. Bolton. Bolton.
Yeah. But we were walking through the market and she was like, oh, if it was like a zombie outbreak, this would be like first center for it. And I was like, why would you say something like that?
Don't say that now.
In the dead of night.
Why?
I was like, but then at the same moment, some guy like rolled past on a bike and I absolutely shit myself because I didn't know what it was.
And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And films that kind of affect you in that kind of
it's
way.
Very, it's very atmospheric, the film. Yeah. And it really does get across the kind of, you know, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of kind of plot elements and mystery elements and characters doing things they shouldn't be doing. But, you know, every time you hear that howl, you're like, gee, it's kind of, it's blood chilling, you know. And every time someone goes out on the moor, you're like, oh, fuck someone out on the moor. You know, shit, what's going to happen? You're never quite sure. So yeah, I highly recommend that version. If you want to recommend other versions, that's fine. I've not seen them. That's it. The Benedict Cumberbatch version, and that is all I've seen. But I picked that one because apparently that Hammer version, that Sherlock Holmes version, is not only one of the best, apparently one of the best interpretations of that story.
Yeah.
But it is also known as being the best, one of the best film adaptations of Sherlock Holmes in general, because in the original book he's actually, it's after he's suspected to have died in a battle with Moriarty, but he falls off the waterfall.
What?
Yeah, the famous waterfall, but he survives, and then he comes back halfway through the book, because it's more of a kind of a Watson story.
Yeah,
and they kind of do a little version of that. He's actually there, but he's not, so mostly Watson doing the stuff. And it's not like, and the Watson's quite good, because he's not like a bumbling, like, oh, I'm silly, I don't know anything, Sherlock Holmes, I'm just a bit of an idiot.
Yeah,
you know, you're a doctor, you're a learned man, you're not an idiot. So I like his interpretation of it as well. So yeah, highly recommend Hound of the Baskervilles. I think that's 90, I'll just check the date, 1950-something. 59, yes, 1959. So check that out. But yes, that is my number two. So this is it.
Right.
This is the big one for you.
I know, well...
This is your definite number one, you said earlier.
It is definite number one, but I'm kind of cheating because there's two dogs in this film.
Okay. My dog was an alien. I'll let you off.
That's all right. So my number one is Homeward Bound.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, mate. Yes. So, good.
There's quite a few reasons for it being my number one.
Okay.
So before you were talking about how you had a girlfriend who was like, stop crying.
Yes.
I am the person that does not cry at films.
Okay.
Right. There's literally not a very little amount that makes me cry. However, the ending of Homeward Bound gets me. And it never used to. It never used to. I could literally watch it as a kid. I've watched it thousands of times. Mm. I knew it word for word. Literally never touched me, and I don't know if I've got my own dog.
I think different times in your life, because you change as a person, you grow, you become more sensitive to certain things, or you change your mind on certain things, you're a constantly evolving person, things can affect you in different ways, and even stuff you've seen before and experienced before, you experience things in a whole new light. So yeah,
tell us
more though.
Oh, it genuinely makes me cry though, like proper horrible cry, like ugly cry.
Yeah. Snot coming down, snot going into your mouth, and then the snot mixing with your dribble, then coming out of the mouth again.
Yeah,
yep.
It's not
gross.
Nice, but it is genuinely like there's for a dog film.
Yeah,
I know. Like
there is a cat. There is a cat.
Yeah, fair enough. And it's like an adaptation from The Incredible Journey.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, first of all, Shadow is the best dog in the world.
Is it a Labrador?
He is a Labrador.
Yeah,
Golden Retriever.
Golden Retriever. Yeah, go on.
So he is the best dog in the world. Mm. Like he genuinely, he's got an owner, and it's.
That's it. Do or die.
He's
do
just
or die.
Like, I need to be with him. That's my owner, and I should be around him all the time and protecting him and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But and then you've got like Chance that's in there.
No, okay.
Chance is the reason that we've got.
Is that Michael J. Fox?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's a really good kind of like when we talk about like dogs and voices and stuff. It's a really good thing for do as well. Mm. It's like a really nice way of looking at it, and his voice kind of matches the dog as well, which is really good. But yeah, Chance is the reason that we have an American Bulldog.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from being about, 8 years old?
Yeah.
that is the reason. Yeah, that's the dog for me.
I'm glad you chose this because I think this would have been in my top five as well.
Yeah,
if not number one.
I mean, you've literally got everything in there. Like, it's a story about trying to get home. They've got, like, action scenes in there.
Yeah.
There's, like, the bit with the... Is it a mountain lion?
Yeah. It's like a big... Again, I've not seen it for a very long time, but I always...
I've literally watched it so much, I can't
probably see. Beat by beat.
Pretty much. So yeah, there's a bit with a mountain lion in there. There's a bit where they find a lost child.
Yeah.
And there's like that kind of thing.
Wow.
But yeah, and like literally that...
They sound like very good dogs already.
So good. And like the ending where they come over that hill and you just see her, because Chance is kind of like, he's...
he says that it's like his second chance because he was brought up on, like, must have been on the street or playing the pound and stuff like that. So he's kind of adjusting to life at home.
Yeah.
And then they take him away from that home and he's like, I'm not bothered. It's almost like
it's like if he'd gone to, like, if he'd been like a juvenile delinquent or something.
Much, yeah.
And he's and trying to kind of like make him up for that.
So, like, they take him to somewhere and he's like, chasing chickens. And
Or he's like lived in an orphanage. He's like a rough kid lived in an orphanage or something like that. Yeah.
Kind of adjust to a life. And then he's like, throughout the film, he's not really kind of bothered. And then he's like, oh, yeah, we'll go back, but I don't want to end up in the bad place. And then literally, as he comes over the kind of thing at the top, and he goes, Jamie! And that's the bit that gets me when he's running towards his... And I literally, like, it properly gets me. I don't know what it is, but I think it's...
Is that the little... Is it the family of the little boy?
Yeah.
Yeah, the little boy's
Jamie. Yeah, the little boy's dog. So, and then, obviously, with Shadow, because you think that's it for him. Like, that you get stuck in the mud, and that's kind of like... Yeah. And then that's the whole emotional thing of, well, he got out of the mud, and then he's back with his boy again. So, it's a really nice...
It's good.
Proper love that.
Yeah. Again, like, it would be on... I would have rewatched it for if it was Good Dogs. I would definitely rewatch that one. So that would be my first point of call, I think. I can't remember it very well, but I've got nothing but fond memories about it.
It's genuinely...
Like, the feelings I have for that film are still there. I might not remember how the film goes, but I remember how it made me feel.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way.
It's literally just a really touched me. And I just, all the way through.
You know, I always remember that. For, like, I don't remember many, like, I don't go like, all those dog films. You know, I'm a dog. I like dogs and stuff, but like, I'm not like, I won't go out and watch a lot of kind of dog movies and stuff.
No, it's like me. I'm not like, you get the new ones like a dog person and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah,
too bothered about it. Like, I think Marley and Me was probably the last
kind of major one. But I remember, again, I remember the feelings that I had, and it always stuck with me, that kind of dog film.
Yeah,
like live dog. Do they do the thing where they make the lips move?
No.
They don't? Okay.
No, so this is kind of a pet hate, because when the lips move, it kind of like takes it away from them.
Yeah.
Whereas like animals, they can do it. They can talk to each other without moving the mouths and stuff anyway. Exactly. So it makes sense that the mouths aren't moving when they're talking to each other.
So it's more like...
And it's literally they kind of look at each other.
Yeah, and then
it's like the brain that's saying it and communicating. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I think that's probably... what helps, because I think sometimes it's weird when they do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and sometimes they do it with human teeth. Have you noticed that?
Weird.
That's weird. Like, I've seen some adverts recently. I can't remember what the advert was for on TV, but there's a dog. There's always a dog kind of sat there, a different dog each time. And they have human teeth underneath, and it freaks me out. It's weird.
Is it the Flash advert?
Maybe. Maybe. I think there's a pug in one of them, and there's something else. Yeah. But I'm like, yeah, it might be a singing one. I'm just like, I'm looking at... There's one with babies as well recently, which freaks me out as well.
Teeth.
Yeah. Well, they don't have teeth, but they sing. They sing. They sing, and they're like, we are the future or something like that. And it's just like, it freaks me out. It's just like, it just looks really disturbing. But yeah, I'm not sure if it always kind of works. I think given like how well it's done, like the special effects.
Yeah.
And the human teeth thing is weird.
Yeah, definitely.
So if they don't do that, that's good. But yeah, I don't know if it would... I think it would take away from this film.
Yeah.
I think they would be too distracting. Definitely.
Well, this is it. I mean, if you look at kind of...
If we look at Babe, it works for Babe. Because it's... And it's very... Like, Babe is a little bit over the top. There's like, you know, there's the mouse and, you know...
Like the goose that thinks he's a cop.
Yeah.
And all the rest
it's stupid
stuff.
And weird.
Yeah, it makes sense that it's in there.
Interesting fact. Did you know the director of Mad Max Fury Road... directed Babe 2, Pig in the City?
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
The same director.
So far away from you.
Yeah. Quite a bit. Just so you know, I think it's George something. Miller? George Miller? I think it's George Miller. Yeah. Just so you know. You know.
Random. Pub.
It's Babe 2, The Road Warrior. There you go. Pub quiz answer for you.
Definitely.
Yeah. No, I absolutely adore that film. Really fun. I need to see it again.
Yeah.
Did they do a sequel?
They did, Lost in San Francisco. Again, another really good film.
Is it good?
It is. Do you know what? As sequels go, I mean, it's kind of the same premise of...
Is it directed TV, directed video type thing?
Yeah, kind of, but it's still kind of worth a watch because obviously you kind of see him grow as a family in the first one. And then in the second one, Jamie, who is Chance's owner, he kind of gets a little bit older, and they're saying that he's kind of like turning into a bit of a teenager. He's really not got time for his dog. He can't be bothered looking after him as much.
Yeah.
and there's kind of a fray in their relationship. Okay. So then when they get lost, Chance is like, oh, I don't want to go back. He doesn't want me anymore. Really? So he's kind of feeling the kind of strain again, of it. Yeah. But then he falls in love with this other dog while he's there.
Fair enough. Of course, standard. With,
like, yeah. Gets a bit far-fetched at one point.
I always think about like Lady and the Tramp, and Lady and the Tramp is basically just two dogs wanting to have sex. That's basically all Lady and the Tramp is. You know, as enjoyable as it is, you know, minus the, you know, obvious racism, Lady and the Tramp. You know, it's basically just two dogs who want to bang. You know, if you boil it down, which is fine, it's most love stories. It's love stories, you know, it's love stories, I guess. They're just all about people that just want to bang. But yeah, nice. No, a fantastic choice. Well done. That was a good one. Okay, so my number one is one you've actually already mentioned. It is Scrappy-Doo from Scooby-Doo 2002.
Such a bad dog.
Now, this is from a script by James Gunn. Okay. Of Guardians of the Galaxy fame. Now he's a bit of a nerd. He's you know, he's got a lot of geek credentials. He's currently directing Suicide Squad 2, which I'm actually really looking forward to. I think it's going to be really good. The first one was a bit mixed for me.
Chabby for me.
Yeah, chabby, a bit chabby. I'll be honest, of all the words to describe Suicide Squad, I've not heard anyone describe it as chabby.
It is so chabby.
There is a little bit of chav element. Now you've said it, I can see it. So Scrappy-Doo is a character they introduced in the cartoon because Scooby-Doo was losing ratings, which is often was done for a lot of TV shows. So a lot of like sitcoms would introduce, you know, a new character like
Poochie.
Poochie. Yeah. Basically a kind of a Poochie. He is definitely a bad dog. So it's sort of that thing. I've talked about it before. Like it does happen, and it's to try and, you know, boost ratings, but make people watch. But often it doesn't. It's a cash grab. It doesn't really work. So Scrappy-Doo is that, but he did prove to be popular, and he did keep the show running, and various other shows have still included Scrappy-Doo in different iterations.
It's the cuteness of it as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a puppy version. Yeah.
And if you're talking about small dog syndrome, my God, he is small dog syndrome. Yeah, he's like, let me at him, puppy power. You know, all this, he's constantly, he's like,
yeah.
And it's just like, shut the fuck up.
Kind of like he's got ADHD.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Yeah, I can see that. He's just got to do something all the time. If he's not doing something, he's not having an adventure, he's not fighting, he's not doing something, you know, let's do this, let's fight the ghost. And obviously they're shagging Scooby and not, you know, like, you know, not quite, you know, don't want to really, they just want to eat, smoke weed and have, and you know,
get
just,
the munchies.
And not get scared by ghosts, but you know,
pretty much everyone wants
that's the way it worked. So that's the show, that's the premise. But you know, whether they're dealing with real ghosts, which you know is some kind of case, or masked, you know, people pretending to be monsters and stuff, you know, depends on the iteration of Scooby-Doo. I've never met a person who goes, you know what, I love Scrappy-Doo. Not one person in my life has ever said, you know what character I really love? Scrappy-Doo. Because he's annoying. He's the annoying friend you all have. I'm probably the annoying friend most people have. And I'm a bit like, I can be a bit like excitable and stuff like that. But he's just irritating. And he's constantly trying to fight something. And you know, for the second he tried to clobber a ghost, the ghost would clobber him, murder him, kill him, whatever they do.
Knock him out,
you know, poltergeist it, you know, whatever they want to do. He's just irritating. For a lot of his appearances, for all the times I've seen him, he's a one-note character.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, literally, that's what he's there.
So that's why I think James Gunn's script is quite clever, because literally, nobody likes Scrappy-Doo. What do? We reposition him as a villain in the film.
Yeah.
And it does work.
It does work. It's actually, I remember watching it for the first time, and when it kind of revealed that it was Scrappy-Doo, I was like, oh, no way!
Yeah, I was like, that's a bit genius.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. For a kids' film as well.
And like I said, James Gunn is a huge talent, and I think that's a really, real clever way of twisting and turning the genre and making fans kind of get on board with it a bit more.
You've got to think, it's kind of like you were saying about like ratings and stuff, and when the movie came out, Scooby-Doo's been around for forever.
Since the 60s.
Yeah. And even when that came out, it was probably a bit of a dip again.
Yeah.
Because obviously they've revamped it and it looks weird.
They've got things like, you know, teaming up with KISS and teaming up with the WWE and teaming up with Batman things like that.
He must have reintroduced kind of Scooby-Doo to like a newer generation because, and it was so well done.
Yeah.
Had the Rowan Atkinson's in it. As well.
Like, and he plays, so Scrappy's disguised as Rowan Atkinson for the majority of the film.
Majority of it.
And he's playing this, does he have this like a weird, like foreign accent and stuff?
think he does. Oh, he's just like a really weird character.
Yeah, he's like, oh, hello, hello. Yeah, he's like this. It's kind of like a Club Med type thing, isn't it?
They're all trapped on an island too.
Well, I can't really remember the plot that much, but it's something about this magic.
Is he trying to turn them all into like all the teenagers are kind of
they all get to the, yeah, these monsters, aren't they?
Yeah. No, I think it's like they are monsters, like they become monsters, yeah. But like really kind of reformed, kind of like Stepford Wife.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so they're like bad. They're like bad kids.
Well, not bad kids. Like kids when they go in, and then when they come out, they're kind of monsters. Yeah.
You know what I thought was also clever about the script is that the girlfriend that Shaggy gets is called Mary Jane, which is another name for marijuana. It's good writing. Don't know about the direction so much. I think the casting was pretty good. Don't know about the direction. I can't say I've seen the sequel to it. Was it Monsters Unleashed?
I think.
Whatever it's called. But I think that alone was a really, really good idea. So, quickly, we're just going to go through some honorable mentions. Yes. So we'll do that. But just before, I would just kind of have another break because this is tiring talking about dogs, you know, and we're getting very emotional about.
Odin needs attention.
And Odin does need attention. He's been very quiet. Let's check he's not dead.
And speaking of champions, friends, Canine Crunchies is the champion of all dog biscuits.
Canine Crunchies can't be beat. They make each meal a special treat. Happy dogs are those who eat nutritious Canine Crunchies.
Okay, we're back from our break. I'm ready to list our honourable mentions. Bad dogs, good dogs, all the dogs in between. Hot dogs, small dogs, some as big as your head. So I'm going to go, let's go with you again.
Okay.
And let's talk about your honourable mention.
Okay, so we've got to go with Sam from I Am Legend.
I thought this might come up.
Yeah, like very close cut, but he's a good dog that kind of goes bad though, isn't she? Is it a girl? I think it's a girl.
I'm not sure. I'll be honest, I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, no.
But I know it's been spoilt for that. Yeah. The dog stuff has been spoilt for now. And I've heard the ending's not great. So.
Yeah, there's supposed to be two endings, though.
I've heard that. Yeah. There's one that's more like the book and the one that the movie went with. But that's fine. There's been a lot of interpretations of that story, Vincent Price's Last Man on Earth and Omega Man with Charlton Heston. Lots of takes on it. Good show. Someone mentioned that at work actually when I asked them about it.
It's definitely like that connection between like a man and his dog in it, like especially with him being the last person, and then and it's just horrendous.
You know what I'd also recommend is it's a very much cult film, but it's A Boy and His Dog. And it's basically nuclear apocalypse has happened. And he's kind of a good and a bad dog. Basically, this young man has a psychic connection to a dog.
Okay.
And he looks like the kind of Dulux dog from the, he kind of looks a bit like that, I think, if I remember rightly. And he's basically more intelligent and he tells him what to do and where to go and how to think. But basically, it's a story about him going around and kind of raping women.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bad dog.
But it becomes very interesting and like, I think he kind of falls in love, but then he kind of gets his comeuppance and it's a good all round film. But yeah, it's not the protagonist is not a likable protagonist.
Yeah.
But you do like the dog and he kind of, they have this connection. But anyway, I've kind of not sold it to anybody now, haven't I? it's the white entitled male film. With his dog and his dog. But I quite like it. I think it's a very, very cool, like, sci-fi film. That was a good one. Good one. Shall I get some of mine or do you want to keep going with yours?
Right, okay. So Shiloh is a good film if you want to watch a dog film.
Mm-hmm.
Not watched it in a while.
I'm not that familiar with Shiloh. What's Shiloh about?
So it's a dog. Yes. Farmer owns a dog, but the dog keeps running away, finds a little boy. They have, like, a relationship. And then right at the very end, spoiler alert, the farmer gives the dog to the little boy.
That's nice.
So that's another one. Honorable mention. Nice one. Do you want another one?
Go on, keep going.
Best, hero dog, Lassie.
Yeah, obviously Lassie.
I mentioned Lassie.
Yeah.
I don't think I've watched any of the Lassie films, but.
I mean, the influence is there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's kind of legendary.
I was looking up a list online. I think you can find it. It's like top 100 iconic dogs in movies. And like Toto was number one.
Oh, Toto.
Yeah, Toto from Wizard of Oz. So
many dogs.
Like literally thousands and thousands of dog movies. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a dog-focused movie.
Yeah.
The dog can just be in the movie and be a big part of that movie or a small part, you know. And that's why it's been so hard to kind of nail down these kind of... And there's been so many suggestions, which we've been through already.
Yeah.
They're all great suggestions. Absolutely. Maybe we should do a cat one. Maybe we should do... Maybe, I mean, you know, you might not want to do the cat one.
I could probably... I can't really think of any cats in
there. Yeah. Maybe you could do bad cats and I could do good cats. So we switch it.
Okay, yeah. Let's do that.
And then we can, you know, because that way I'm not always doing these.
Always doing
the best. I'm like, please don't relate me to these bad animals. I'm not also a bad animal. No, I'd like to do it. Yeah, well, maybe we'll do something like that and we can have a root.
What else have we got? Pongo from 101 Dalmatians.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So, yeah, big one.
Talking about a dog that goes around and saves his own puppies and
101 puppies.
Well, yeah, saves a lot of puppies and then gets them back home. So he's obviously a
very fertile dog. The most fertile dog in the world.
Yeah, probably.
How much is an average like litter for dogs?
I think in the Disney version there's about 15, and at the minute I think there's been a couple of news stories where there's been about 15, 18 dogs spawned to a litter.
Really?
Yeah, normally anywhere between 1 and 5, 6.
Yeah. I guess.
So, but yeah, you can get upwards of about 15.
This is interesting. I'm learning dog stuff I never knew before. So
I always
talking about dogs. Yeah, you do. You know your dogs. You know, I've clearly picked the right person for this topic. So I know fuck all about dogs.
This is it.
But go on. Any more?
Oh God, there was an absolutely awful kids film called Cats and Dogs.
Yes, with Tobey Maguire, Alec Baldwin, and some other people.
A little beagle in that, I can't remember his name.
I think that's Tobey Maguire's character. Yeah, I think that's Tobey Maguire's character.
So he plays a beagle in it. He is also a good dog.
Yeah, I think there was a sequel as well, maybe a direct-to-video one. And again, that's the one with the lips moving.
Yeah, which kind of works in that one though, because it doesn't take itself too seriously. Like,
it's very stupid. Yeah, they've got headsets and spy plans and collars with microphones and all that. So yeah, you can kind of. I think that's the issue sometimes with like dog actors. Like as good as they can be, you can also have some very bad dog actors. Yeah. Like same with children. Never work with animals and children. Yeah. That's what they say, isn't it? So, but it'll be like they're bouncing a ball in front of their face, and they're like, yeah. And then the mouths are moving, but there's like literally no emotion.
Yeah.
So that's probably why in Call of the Wild they've gone with a digital dog as well, because you can get more expression.
I think it's good though. I mean, like we're saying about all the training that kind of goes into it. Like you're looking at the Beethoven films, I think they used some upwards of like 30 puppies to do Beethoven 2.
Okay.
Just because they grow so fast.
Yeah, of course.
I think it's like they're quite big dogs anyway. So. Mm.
Well, a lot of the time when they have a baby or a child in a film, they get twins.
Yeah, so it's
because obviously child labor laws, you can't have them overworking, so they would just swap them out.
That's it. It's exactly the same.
So there you go. Very interesting. Any others you can think of?
Yeah, I've got to put one in Hatchie.
Hatchie.
Yeah, have you ever seen it?
Is that Richard Gere?
Yes, it is.
Okay, no, I've not seen that one.
So based on a true story, man and his dog, and it turns out, so Richard Gere plays a guy who ends up dying partway through.
Okay.
And it's just about Hatchie just sat waiting at a train station for his own.
Oh, God, it's not like Futurama, is it?
Friend.
It's not like Futurama.
It really is like that.
Oh, God.
So if you're a bit, pulls on your heartstrings a bit, it turns out, like they try and tie some.
You know what? I think I actually heard of this before the film came out.
Did you?
Yeah, I think I heard the story that the dog would always go to the train station.
Used to walk to the train station every day.
Just
like,
waiting.
To drop him off and then pick him back up. And he'd just like...
No, I've heard it. Yeah, I've heard of this.
And there's a statue.
Yeah.
There's like a Hatchie statue.
Maybe that's why I've heard of it. But obviously, is the film fairly recent?
Last 10, 15 years.
Okay, fairly recent.
So, yeah.
I think I've probably heard of the story before.
Yeah.
But that's probably why I might have heard of the story.
It's probably why they turned it into a furnace.
Jesus. Gosh, that's a heartbreaker.
It really is. Like, I watched it and I was like, oh, I feel like I can't do anything else. I should be sad for the rest of the day.
Hello, old friend depression. Hello there.
Another... You're feeling down, don't worry.
So we've got the whole kind of gamut of like dog movies with this like, I think I've mentioned this is the most the podcast where I mentioned the most movies or the most movies have been mentioned. So guys, you've got a lot of choice. So is that your honorable mentions anymore?
Kind of like going back to like first good dog is probably Old Yeller, but he turns into a bad dog in the end.
Yeah, so very much.
Get a mention.
So speaking of old dogs with rabies. So I have to mention Cujo. It's a very famous, you know, bad dog movie. Stephen King book. Gets bitten by a bat. Gets rabies and attacks a woman and her child in a locked car.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, the first half of the movie is a bit boring and a bit shit.
Yeah.
It's basically, you see a bit of the dog and the rabies and the family he has, but the rest of the film is just about a couple that are like having marital problems.
Yeah.
The woman has an affair, the man leaves them to deal with it elsewhere, goes off to do work, and then their car breaks down and they're stuck and the dog is trying to get into the car and eat them.
Yeah.
And I think the child's quite ill, so he's like, or he's getting sunstroke or something,
yeah,
heat exhaustion, something like that. So it's a real life and death scenario. So the latter half of the film is great. It's fantastic. Lots of tension and stress and stuff. Dee Wallace is in it. She's amazing. She's the mum in E.T.
Oh, right.
She's a phenomenal actress. She does a lot of horror and other stuff, like The Howling and...
Yeah.
You know, she's the Critters and a few other things. I mentioned her on the Screen Queens podcast I did a while back with Rasheen. She's brilliant. I think she might be coming to a convention soon, maybe a horror convention, possibly, if I remember rightly. But second half film good, first half film boring and shit. Just not done in a, it's not just not done in an interesting way. Like,
yeah.
It's been done, but that storyline's been done better.
In a bad film.
Yes. I don't know if I think they're thinking of remaking it, so hopefully it'll be a bit more interesting or a bit more in depth.
Yeah, they'd have to kind of look
good. Yeah, you have to do something. But yes, The Omen. So I didn't really want to mention too many films like Rottweilers, because I've had a Rottweilers and I don't want them to get bad press. But they are very effective in the film. Again, very small appearances, but they're like his guard dogs or his hounds of hell, if you will.
Yeah.
And they're all like, you know, staring and being quite demonic and very much like the acting of the thing. I think it was between them and or the thing dog, but I chose the thing. But yeah, that's kind of a good one. Man's Best Friend stars Lance Henriksen from Aliens. He plays like a geneticist and he's made a... Again, it's very much like White Dog. Woman finds a dog, adopts him. It turns out he's been genetically modified to have various powers, and it has camouflage powers and things like that. So, and that's a Rottweiler as well. There is the film Rottweiler from Brian Usner from 2004, which basically has a naked man running away from a cybernetic robot Rottweiler.
Oh my God.
Or I think it's a cyborg more like. Zoltan, Hound of Dracula, Dennis mentioned earlier. And there's also Devil Dog, Hound of Hell from the same year. I think they're both TV movies. And now, I know you included two dogs in yours, but I tried to avoid this. So I'm mentioning these films are about packs of dogs.
Yeah.
Again, I've not seen all of these films, I'll be honest. But I have, there was a lot to, you know, research, but I made my choices. So, I stuck with them.
So many dog films.
There is a Hungarian film that's currently on Amazon Prime. If you want to watch it, it's called White God.
Okay.
And again, it's very much blurs the line between good and bad dogs. A good dog gets kind of, there's laws and has to be abandoned. The dad throws it away, but the little girl has to go find the dog. However, that dog has become the leader of a bad pack of dogs that escape a pound kind of thing, or an extermination camp, I believe. And they go on a rampage. So I was a bit like, I don't want to include that one because it's a bit, I'm not sure. And again, I'm not sure how it'll end.
Yeah.
There's Dogs from 1976, which is about attack dogs. And again, I think they're genetically modified or there's some sort of science.
I love how there's
weird science involved.
Science, sci-fi.
Yeah. The Breed, again, genetically modified dogs on an island that are abandoned. Again, it's the owners, guys. It's the owners, not the dogs.
It's definitely the owners.
And again, The Pack is again about abandoned dogs that go on a rampage again. So a lot of attack dog movies for you to watch there.
Yeah.
But again, I want to specify like singular dogs more so in the list. Been over all the honorable mentions. That's it. How was that for you? Enjoy podcasting? Is this your first podcast?
It was my first podcast.
Did you enjoy yourself? You have a lot of fun? You learned to learn? I definitely learned a lot about dogs.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've learned a lot. I like sitting in front of microphones and talking to people.
There we go. That's good. Well,
did you do it again?
I mean, this is all that is. I mean, that's the whole premise. I don't know if I explained this to you fully, but that's basically what you have to do.
That's fine, then.
That's good.
Why don't you start becoming a YouTuber and have cameras and stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay. Like, just other people doing that that you know of?
No, but I just don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that? That's fine. Okay.
Let's
do a
podcast.
That's fine. Yeah. Let's do your podcast. You know, I often think I look like shit. So this is perfect. So, you know, I also have to worry about other sound editing and editing the movie and the sound. Blah, blah, blah. Hard enough to learn how to do this, let alone, you know, start getting video and lighting and all this other stuff. And, it seems like a lot more effort, but I enjoy the podcast as it is. So, so I can look however I please, covered in boils and human feces. However I want to look, that's my choice. And you can't see. I could be naked for all I know. I'm not naked because that'd be weird. But anyway, so where to find the podcast? We're going to talk about that very briefly. So the podcast is on Facebook. So it's at Secret Bores. You can find it there. Twitter, it's @Dan_Bores. Instagram, it's Spider Dan Secret Bores, all one word. The podcast itself is available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and many, many more. Also, I've set up a funding page. So it's on Ko-fi.com. That's Ko-fi.com/ Spider Dan and the Secret Bores. If you'd like to buy me a coffee, that's £3 a donation, would really appreciate. And if you donate enough coffees, I'll give you back some special exclusive stuff. And you can create your very own podcast that I will do for you for everyone's listening benefit as well. And also don't forget to use the hashtag #PrepareForPrattle when you interact with us on here, not on any of the social medias. Thank you very much for listening, guys. And thank you very much, Natalie, for helping out. And I hope you guys go out and see Call of the Wild.
Definitely.
Because it looks pretty good. And Harrison Ford plays, you know, it's like Chewbacca just switched. Yeah. You know, basically. But, you know, he's
playing Chewie.
Yeah, so Chewie. He's playing Chewie this time.
Yeah.
That's basically what it was, like we were saying earlier. So, yes. Goodbye, guys. And thank you again. Goodbye.